Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Achtung Millwall supports the Lions Food Hub, and all of our advertising revenues will be donated to support this fantastic initiative. It's now based at the Lions Centre on Bolina Road, and it's run by our own Kelly Webster. This is a friendly food bank supporting families in the Bermondsey and SE16 area. If you can help support the Lions Food Hub in any way, please visit at Lions Food Hub on Twitter, or get in touch with us at Achtung Millwall. The Lions Food Hub. Come on, you Lions.
You're listening to Achtung Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Burnley. Accept no substitute.
So good afternoon, good morning, good evening, good night, whatever time of day we are listening to this podcast. This is Achtung Grassroots for another edition. And we are absolutely over the moon and delighted to be invited. We're not invited to invite on, should I say, Mr. Adam Woodward, the current manager of Erith Town. Adam, how are we this evening?
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much for having me on.
No problem at all. And thank you very much for coming on. It's a real pleasure. And I know we've caught up a couple of times this season already, but I thought it'd be really good to put a bit of a spotlight on Erith Town and the management and the club and how we're going. So let's just start with you. So talking about yourself, how did you get into sort of like playing football at your level that you played at and coaching? How did it all come about for you, mate?
Obviously, when I was younger, I was in a youth team at Thamesmead with Keith McMahon. And I progressed through there, played in the first team reserves and left there and went to, I just went to various clubs, East Grinstead, Lingfield, played half a season at Sittingbourne and then ended up playing really with my friends down at Phoenix when I was in the Kent and Victor League. And I knew Steve O'Boy, who was the reserve team manager at Thamesmead when I was in the youth team, and I always got on really well with Steve. So I went and played in the Kent and Victor League, it was called then, with Steve and Tony Beckenham, and we won the league, which was really good that first season. Then the season we went up into the what is now the Skeffel Prem, I got injured pre-season. That sort of I never really came back from that, and I petered out really and ended up going down the coaching route. Funnily enough, I did finish playing at Erith Town under Mark Tompkins, and then I gave it up at the end of the season and went into my coaching role, which I was quite lucky with, which was a reserve team manager's job at Phoenix under Steve O'Boyle. So he got me into the adult side of coaching. I already obviously had a business where I'd done kids coaching, but he gave my first chance in reserve team football.
What was the injury, if you don't mind me asking?
So I've arthritis in one of my knees, severe tendonitis. But funnily enough, I used to get, when I got injured when I was younger, I'd come back rather quickly, but I tore my hamstring one pre-season. It took me, I think, 3-4 months to get back, and my body just wasn't recovering.
Yeah.
So, and I was a goalkeeper as well, which kicking was a strong part of my game, and I just lost all power in my legs from the from that. And I just sort of had time out and lost interest, and I wasn't one that was really into my fitness. I was more interested in going out. I don't think, if I look back now, I wish I'd maybe tried a little bit harder. I was never a top goalkeeper. I only ever played Skeffel Prem, which is step five, what Erith is in now. I had a half a season in the league above, but I never really cared enough. personally that I feel. And that's what I always say to players now. You've got to really care and be thankful that you play football.
Yeah. There is that fine balance, though, isn't there? I find that, you know, there's caring about the game, as you say, but then it becomes the enjoyment level. And like you were saying there, it seems that towards the end with your injury, perhaps not so much the enjoyment sort of went away exactly, but, you know, the sort of injuries and trying to come back from it was a bit sort of demoralising, so that would have had an effect. So just looking on the website and things like that, you were unveiled as the Erith Town manager in, was it May 2017 or something, a few years back?
Yeah. So from going from Finch Reserves, I was only there a month as manager, and I got promoted as first team coach by Steve after Tony Beckenham left. And we won the league, the Step 5 league that year. And I'd probably say it was the most enjoyable time in football that I had. And I went from Phoenix, I'd done a season and then a season as coach again in the league above, and then left there and went to Glebe as manager.
Yeah.
In Step 6 and won the league there, was there for a season, won the league and left, and literally left Glebe, and within 15-20 minutes my phone rang and it was someone asking to talk to me from Erith Town.
So it shows you was in demand then, but you say that with
I wouldn't say that much. I think the timing was quite lucky. Obviously I won Step 6, well, we won Step 6 at Glebe and won it quite comfortably as well. We had a very good side, which was a lot of my friends, which always helps. And yeah, obviously I came over to Erith Town.
Yeah, and looking at the stats, and obviously the statement came out when you joined, I went through the archive slightly, but he said the season before you joined, the Erith finished just above the relegation zone. I think it was 3-4 points clear of the in about four from bottom with 31 points from 38 games. What did you think made Erith the right team for you to join, considering the year before they hadn't had the best of years?
Funny enough, it was a new owner came in, Mark Devaney, who's the owner now, and I met him in his offices in the back of his house with what was my assistant then, Timmy Walden, and my coach Sam Long, who was one of my closest friends. And I sat down, he told me the visions for the club, and he was quite open and honest, which is what I like. The budget wasn't great the first season, but money's not everything to me and budgets are not everything to me. And I just like things done professionally. So we sat down, we spoke, and I said about trying. Erith Town's always been a hard place to go. And I think they sort of got lost a little bit towards the end. And there was ground sharing at certain teams, Cray Valleys, your VCDs. And I spoke to the chairman and said, we need to try and, I want to go somewhere I can build a football club from the bottom up.
Yeah.
The first thing I asked for was that we move back to the stadium where we are now. So we had to have a season at VCD because we had a year left there. And then I said, I want to return to the stadium. And to be honest, Mark sold it really well to me. And when I took over, we had, I think, three footballs. And I gave him a list of what I felt we needed. I needed tracksuits, training kits, balls, bat, all this. And I think literally within 2 weeks of me taking a job, it was delivered, which I knew he'd be a man of the word. And he always has been. Is whenever I need something, if he can't do it, I can't do it. But majority of the time, he knows what it's what I usually asking for is usually best for the football club.
Just to follow on from that, I've met Mark a number of times. Obviously, at the Erith Town, Erith Belvedere game, we do some things with the supporters club. As you're aware, you know, there's discounted rates, which Mark was a huge part of setting up. And you're right, Mark's a very honest, very down-to-earth guy who puts so much work in. And I remember when I went to the Erith Town, Erith Belvedere game, he was actually on the turnstile, wasn't he, collecting like the money and giving out the tickets and things like that. And you think, you know, in all due respect, he's like the chairman of the club and he's standing there really good at that. But I remember he said to me, literally, it was like, unfortunately just before the pandemic hit, that he's trying to make it like a really community club and that kind of thing. And for those who know the sort of Erith area pretty well, when you get to the church on the corner, there's a huge sign that isn't there that says, like, you know, partnered with the local church, up the doffers, that kind of thing. And you do a lot of soccer schools, not you personally, obviously, but the club do a lot of soccer schools at the weekends. And how do you think Erith are seen in the local area, or Erith Town are seen in the local area, compared to the likes of, say, Erith and Belvedere, Welling United, these other non-league clubs, Dartford, BCDs, as you just mentioned. Do you think they could be mentioned in the same kind of breath, or you're aiming to get there?
Yeah, so obviously with the community scheme, it's something that I set up alongside Mark with my coaching company. So we sort of did it together, and that's gone from strength to strength. We had probably 2 years ago now, we'd done an Easter course down at the local school, and we'd done it for free. For the local community, we had 130 children there that came along for the day to play football, and we was lucky enough that Bradley Dack came down for the day, came down and met the children as well, which is always good for the children.
Yeah, lovely.
So, like I said, we're trying our hardest to do as much as we can in the community. It would be ideal, obviously, if we had our own ground, which I know Mark and Steve Holley, Dean Lee, and the committee are trying their hardest to strive to get. And I think that's what, if we was to get that, I really do feel this football club could be one of the biggest in the area regarding the children's kids teams. We've got 12, 13 teams now. When I joined, we had none. So we're trying to filter our community scheme football into Sunday League so that they turn into teams. I think we've got three teams from that this season. Also got a great Wildcat scheme as well. For girls only football, there's about 15 to 20 children there. And we've got head of youth football in Lewis Brown, who's doing a fantastic job in recruiting young coaches as well. A couple of the academy lads and who are playing the first team, Harry Lawrence and Tom Ash, they're now coaching within the community scheme and taking kids' sides on a Sunday, which is always good for the children to see some of the first team players playing on a Saturday afternoon, then they're their manager on a Sunday, which is always good.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll see that as like journeys that they can go on, can't they? That kind of thing. And like you say, it's quite, I don't think people realise to a degree that even sort of like non-league footballers or footballers in your division, if kids go and watch these players play, and then these players give these kids like or young supporters the time, it really means a lot to them. That can be the thing that really gets them like involved in the game a bit more and try that bit harder. And yeah, I'm in the area, and you know, as much as I know of here from Belvedere's and the Wellings and all these as well, Erith Town really do seem to be doing a very proactive way of reaching out to the community, which I think is brilliant. So if we look at what's happening on the field at the moment, you had a real like sort of topsy-turvy start, didn't you? And I mean, I remember when we spoke after the Erith Derby game that you had a lot of players out. I think you said you had about six or seven for a number of different reasons. But since then, you know, you've seemed to like really turn the corner, and now what, you're fourth place, just 4 points off the top. I know we're early. I know we're only 8 games into the season, and you being a Millwall fan, Adam, you'll know what Kenny Jackett was like, the whole judge me after 12 games. But are you happy with how it's been and recent results have gone?
Yeah, we had a quite honest discussion with the players after the Erith Belvedere game, and went over some stuff at training, and we're quite lucky we've got video analysis. So we went over things, and we're looking at the goals we conceded, and they're all preventable goals. They're all individual mistakes. And we've sort of gone back to basics defensively. And I use the likes of the Millwall side as Sean Hutchinson and Jake Cooper. Whenever I get a chance to watch Millwall, they just defend. They don't do anything else. They head and just kick the ball. And if they're in danger, they head it out of play, reset. And we've started to do that defensively, and we're starting to look really solid. A lot of that is down to my coach, Russell Bedford. He's really, really good with our shape work. We're building the foundations from the back. And that's really helping us going forward, because we will always score goals. But we was leaking some at the time. But now we seem to have... we're starting to keep clean sheets, which is good. We're starting to get players back, which is good. We've added a few signings, which helps as well. So yeah. Hopefully, it's early days. We're obviously fourth at the moment. It's who knows? We just keep doing what we've got to do, and we just keep our head down and keep going.
Yeah, and we've said about how you are with the team performances, and you're saying about how strong and good you are at the back. But you've also got a lot of goals scored as well at the moment, haven't you? And it's sort of good for fans or neutrals if they come to some of your games that they'll be guaranteed a high-scoring game. Has there ever been anyone who sort of stood out for you? I know you mentioned the defence there, but has there been anyone up top who really has impressed you so far?
Yeah, so obviously Stephen Callender is our top goal scorer at the moment. He's doing really well. Obviously, we have Michael Power as well, who's obviously got a lot of experience and has played a very good level. Fred Abassa, he's injured at the moment, and Danny Gannon, who we haven't seen all year really. He had a hamstring injury pre-season. He just can't get back yet. But the one that is shining through at the moment, he scored last night, is young Alfie Eldridge, who's been very patient. He's taking his chances when he gets starts and when he comes on. And he's definitely one for the future. Like I said, he scored last night. He took his goal well. But first thing he said when he came off, he said, "I could have had three or four there," which I was honest with him and said, "Yeah, you really do need to be scoring the goals that the chances you missed." And he's hard on himself, but he's only 17 years of age. But he's definitely one that will play a higher level of football. And like I said, he started last night. He'd done very well. He's probably got man of the match.
And like you say there, you don't want to be too critical on him, but it's good that he's acknowledging things he needs to work on. And a lot of young players have this sort of, not immaturity is the wrong word, but I think football's changed to a point now where with social media and, you know, being able to upload videos here, there and everywhere, you're seeing a lot of videos of people doing things sort of right, which is good, but you don't see many things where people need to work on. So for a young head like that to realise there needs to be some work done, really, really good to see. So we touched on it before the call, and you just mentioned it there, but yesterday you managed to secure a 1-0 win over Fisher, who they're around mid-table in the league at the moment, but they're a tricky side to beat, aren't they? And up in this weekend coming, should I say, is a game against Glebe in the FA Vars second qualifying round. How important are these cups to you? Because I know, like, obviously the league is the bread and butter, but, and I know we're in qualifying rounds at the moment and that kind of thing, but you do want to have good runs in the cups, keep this momentum going, don't you?
Yeah, so we had a few walking wounded last night, so we made a few changes, and we've obviously got a very successful under 23 side at the moment, are doing really well, and a very good academy side. So I felt it was right last night to take a few of the lads that were struggling with injuries out, and we had six academy lads in the squad last night that are under 17s, under 18s, plus two lads that are under 18 as well. So we had like seven or eight under 18 players in the squad last night, and we wasn't treating the cup with a disrespect. It was just we had to look to the future, which was Sheppey on Saturday in the FA Vars. And like I said, we got a few carrying knocks, and last night it was a really, really good test for the youngsters, and they stood up firm and they played really, really well. AJ always has strong attacking sides, and I felt that the 1-0 was a really good result, and it could have possibly been a few more on the night.
Yeah, because I remember when we spoke to AJ a couple of weeks back on the podcast, he was saying about, you know, they've got a lot of players who play some good attacking football, and as I said, Fisher are one of these teams, and where the season's still quite in its early days, they could be in a false position, couldn't they, where, you know, they probably should be or expect to be higher up the table. So to get a 1-0 there is excellent. And we'll touch on the youth teams, because you did ask when we set up this interview in an email if we could just mention some, because is it next Wednesday you've got Glebe in the FA Youth Cup?
Yes.
So just touch on like the youth teams and how they're getting on, and are you excited about the future? You said about building a club, and you know, you spoke about the soccer schools in the community, but how do you see this club being in 5 years on the pitch? Are there any good signs in the youth that we can really, you know, build on something and go from here?
So we set up an academy last year. It was an educational post-16 programme, and we started off with 20 boys, and this season we've got 45, so we have two sides, but we've got an FA Youth Cup game at Glebe. The boys have done really well the last two rounds. They went away to Chatham and beat Chatham after going down to 10 men. And then they went to Maidstone a couple of weeks ago and won there as well, which is really, really good to beat two very, very strong established sides in senior football. The pathway for these boys is definitely there. So, like I said, we had six lads playing in the squad last night. So we had the likes of Harry Lawrence, Ronnie McLean, Tom Ash, Alfie Eldridge, Jude Jeffrey. They've all played in the first team this year. Young David that plays as well, he's popped up into the first team last night. Jay Baker's played in the first team. So we've got, like I said, eight or nine youngsters that really, really are knocking on the door of the first team at 17, 18 years of age. They just need to be nurtured a little bit. They need to be dipped in and out. They need to be a little bit more consistent. There's no point throwing them in at the deep end and expecting these lads to play 30, 35 games at this level of football, because it's unrealistic.
Yeah.
Being dropped in and out. And like I say to the boys, they're very, very hungry to play, but they've also got to understand that they're playing against some very good sides, some very good footballers. And it's a big jump from under-18s football on a Sunday morning to playing step five football. But like I said, at the moment, they've done really, really well, and they are progressing and will be within the first team, with a higher hope within the next 18 months if they keep themselves on the straight and narrow.
No, and that's excellent. And like we were saying earlier on, with the youth, and the youth and the community scheme programs you've got, and sort of soccer schools, all that kind of stuff, when they see these players come down, you know, it's obviously good for their morale. But like you say, to have a clear pathway, because a lot of footballers, don't they? There seems to be like a big gulf between like the first team and reserves or under 23s or youths or however you want to call them these days. So there's the whole big net, isn't there, that gets thrown out, and one or two gets kept in, then the rest get tucked aside. But if you, as you mentioned, the pathway there, but they can see that if they keep working hard and they keep following their goals and that kind of thing, they can make it. It will help you keep and retain your players, won't it? Because with non-league, especially sort of in the London area, or when you're in this sort of area we are in now, where you've got like Welling, as teams we've said, Dartford, you guys, BCD, Erith and Belvedere, Sporting Thamesmead, it can become a little bit of a merry-go-round, can't it? So it's good that you seem to have a nice club set up there where people want to join and actually stay for a little while, don't they?
Yeah, so we've got a very strong under-16 side, a very strong under-18 side, and then we've got our post-16 programme, our under-23s, and then into the first team. So the pathway is clear and is there. And we're at the level now in the Erith Town within the budgets. We do have to use the youth team lads, and we do have to use these players. And like I said, that I'm not afraid to throw the youngsters in. I feel they hold their own. They're very mature. They try and play the right way. They just obviously lack sometimes a little bit physically. But I, like I said, in the next 18 months, I would be expecting a lot of them to be in the first team.
No, that's brilliant. And next weekend's in the league, I know you've got the FA Vars, as we said, coming up and everything that comes with it. But next weekend, you're is it away to Canterbury City? In the league. So see, we do our research on this show, Adam. Don't worry, we're not one of these who just sit there like with Excel spreadsheets and try and work out where, you know, we know where we're meant to be going. But how are you going to prepare for that one? Because that's a fair old drive down to Canterbury, isn't it?
Yes. So obviously we've got Sheppey Saturday, which will be a tough game. It takes our mind a little bit off the league. And then we go to Canterbury next week. We're training Monday and Wednesday, prepare right. Like we will, we'll do our research. Obviously, we're quite lucky. We have a scout as well that goes and watches the opposition for us. So he'll be out scouting Canterbury, looking to see where they're playing. I'll get that report back. We'll look at their strengths and their weaknesses. And then next Saturday, we'll make the journey down to Canterbury, which is a tough place to go. They obviously play at Faversham. So that'd be tough. And obviously they've had a bit of a turbulent week with their financial woes and stuff that's come out recently. So, it'd be a difficult time to go and play them.
No, brilliant. And all of us on the pod and everyone listening, hopefully they'll be wishing you best. But before we go, I will touch on just one final point. I don't know if listeners obviously heard it when you said about Jake Cooper, should I say, and Sean Hutchinson. You're a Millwall fan, aren't you, Adam? Which is
my family's at Millwall, so my uncle, obviously David, that you know, is a Millwall fan. I'm actually an Arsenal fan, but I prefer Millwall. I prefer watching Millwall. I prefer the atmosphere at Millwall.
It's cheaper.
It's not so much. Arsenal's too tourist like for me. I prefer going to Millwall, like I said, when I can, with my uncle and with his friends. Obviously, I've met you a couple of times with your dad there as well. So it's always nice just to go there, go in the old social club, have a drink, and then go to Millwall.
Yeah,
no, it's very good down there. I like it down there a lot.
How do you think the season's going for Millwall at the moment? You're thinking of putting your CV in if it keeps getting any worse?
No, I think he's doing a very good job, right? He's obviously, Millwall haven't got the greatest of budgets. It's difficult when I go watch down there when Harris was in charge. A lot of people moaned about their style of football, but it was effective and it won games. And I think a lot of football fans now watch what they see on the TV with your Man Cities, with your Liverpools, and they think, oh, we can play total football and things like that. At the end of the day, football's about winning games. If I said to a Millwall fan that you're going to play pretty football all year, but you're going to finish fifth from bottom, or you're going to play long ball and win the league, they're going to want to win the league. And I think sometimes people have to be realistic, and they need to be realistic where Millwall are, what Millwall's about. It's a hard-working team. They have to work hard at the Den, otherwise the fans get on their back. But no, I just think they may be lacking a forward, really. I think that's what they're missing. But it depends the style of football you play. I always liked Matt Smith when he plays, and they're directing to him and they feed off him with Jed Wallace, which is good. But yeah, I think if Millwall can get a top half finish, I do generally believe that's a successful season for Millwall, especially with some of the sides that are in that league. My uncle will probably tell you different. He's always expecting the playoffs, but I think that's you need a lot of money. You need, like we said before, we need to spend money on a forward if we want to be in the playoffs. And with a financial fair play, that's tough.
Well, the ultimate question is, Adam, do you think that, you know, if it doesn't go well for him, do you think you could offer a lifeline to John Daddy Budvarsson?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's my uncle's favourite player. So, gets a lot of stick down at Millwall, Budvarsson, to be honest. But again, are they playing to his strengths? We don't know. For every Millwall fan, it's easy to criticise on a Saturday from the stands. We don't see what goes on behind the scenes on a training ground, how Rowett wants teams to set up, how Rowett wants his teams to play. So we don't see that inside of everything. That's why I always think these documentaries that they do on Amazon with the Man City and the Tottenham are really good, because you see the inside of what actually goes on during the week. And I think a lot of Millwall fans need to realise that we don't always see what goes on. I've been at the Den before and they've sat back and absorbed pressure and the fans are booing and they're moaning. And numerous times I've turned to people I've been with and said, it might be the way he's set up. He might want them to do this. It might not be that the players are not working hard. They might just be told you need to sit back. And like I said, it is tough. You need to see what goes on the training ground.
Yeah. And just a final note, this infamous Uncle David, Adam, I think you can also back me up on this one. I always remember a time when we signed Gary Alexander, and he wasn't massively keen on Gary Alexander when we first signed him for a couple of years. And then a couple of years after Gary Alexander left, he went, "Cool, we've been after that Gary Alexander, don't we?" And all of Block 3 just was stunned into silence.
I bet he wouldn't say that if you see him.
Yeah, no, probably wouldn't know exactly. Where's he now, Gary Alexander? Isn't he at Beckenham or something like that? We
shouldn't. Yeah, he's Beckenham. Yeah. He left Glebe and went back playing with Beckenham. He's a nice fellow, Gary. And I remember being at Wembley when he scored that goal. And I remember the first time, I think he took over at Greenwich Borough, it might have been, and I actually spoke to him on the phone. That was the first conversation I said to him was, "I see your goal at Wembley. It's still the greatest goal I've ever seen."
Yeah.
And he's a really nice fellow, Gary. But I'm sure my uncle wouldn't be slating him like he did.
Yeah,
if you see him. I think he did meet him at one of our games. I think he's his hero.
Yeah, that's probably why he started liking him again. Met him at a game. Lovely fella. But yeah, so I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll leave it there, Adam. But thank you again for your time. I won't take up too much more of your evening because it's getting a bit late now. But no, really, really appreciate it. And I know the listeners will like the show. You know, obviously, we're getting good numbers with these grassroots shows. Brilliant. It's good to see the other side of it, really, because as we know, grassroots football may not have the sort of glamour as you said, the Man Cities and all these big clubs, but you know, it's nice to see people digging in and working hard, isn't it? So thank you very much, Adam, and with that I will say goodbye, listeners. So arrivederci, Millwall.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci, Millwall. Till next time.
Who? Who do you want to watch?